Chapter 12, Camp Abilities Around the World. Quote by Ana Velasquez, founder and director of Camp Abilities Guatemala. Lauren, we don't have physicians for children who are blind here. If there's a problem, we have to go to the emergency room. Photo description. Athletes playing cricket at the camp in Bangladesh. The logistics of expanding Camp Abilities in another country presented new mysteries to us. But logistics were the least of it. Spreading Camp Abilities across America was a formidable but familiar challenge. Taking it around the world was a mission of different magnitude. Language became a barrier. Recruiting campers and counselors depended even more on the cooperation of local contacts. The learning curve and the cultural differences can be vast, and the difference in how children with visual impairments are treated in various countries are tremendous. What drove me forward was the belief that kids who are blind or visually impaired, no matter where in the world they live, share the same needs, the same hopes and dreams, the same potential for achievement. Guatemala. I first met Ana Velasquez in 2001 at the Pan American Games for the Blind, which were held that year at the South Carolina School for the Blind. Ana and her family had come with the team from Guatemala to support Ana's daughter, Pau, pronounced Pau, who is blind. I was there with my graduate student, Amanda Tepfer, to collect data for her thesis. When I told Ana about Camp Abilities, she immediately asked for a donation from an eye doctor in her area of Guatemala City so she could bring Pau to Brockport. They could not get the funds or flights in time to come to the Brockport that summer, so they actually came to the Camp Abilities in Alaska. It was just a few weeks after the Pan Am Games in July. That is how determined she was. Ana was so thrilled with the experience her daughter had that she decided to open up a camp in Guatemala. Over the next year, we worked together in my elementary Spanish and her elementary English to get launched. She was hardworking and enthusiastic, but had never organized something of this complexity. Fortunately, I could depend on friends from Puerto Rico, Dr. Margarita Fernandez Vivo and Dr. Ibrahim Cordero, who would later help me start the camp in Costa Rica. My friend, Dr. Luis Columna from Puerto Rico, and a Brockport professor of sports philosophy, Dr. Cesar Torres, who is from Argentina. Their experience was a vital complement to Ana's enthusiasm. In the United States, it's not unusual to require some medical documentation for campers in order to allow them to participate in camps, and often specifically in certain activities. That turned out to be a problem in Guatemala, where a note from a doctor was hard to get because most children do not have family physicians. When they're sick, they go to a clinic. Ana was able to get verbal permission from some parents for camp, including horseback riding, but could not get the required official medical clearances for many of the campers. Education is not compulsory in Guatemala, so many children with visual impairments do not go to school and don't know other children who are blind or visually impaired. Many have never been exposed to sports in school, or anywhere else for that matter. This meant that the campers were not generally as socially and educationally developed as those we might find in other camps. Participating in overnight camps is not a common experience in Guatemala. As a result, many parents are hesitant to entrust their children to someone outside their family. To overcome that hurdle, we had to recruit family members, siblings, aunts, uncles, and parents as counselors. This worked well, but required extra time for training them in the sports and the necessary modifications. One young man came in a wheelchair, and his mother became his counselor. She learned how he could rock climb, play goalball, swim, and ride a horse. She cried several times over the course of the week because she could not believe all the things he could do. Watching him succeed at typical sports brought tears to her eyes. Many photos were taken for her to take home to share with her family and friends the following week. Having family members as counselors had one distinct advantage. They knew the child well, and when they returned home, they could be more helpful in the child's continued development because of what they had learned at camp. One young boy had some rocking behavior, fairly common in children with visual impairments, especially those born prematurely and who spent more than 2 months in the hospital. He also asked repetitive questions because people didn't always tell him what was happening in the environment. When he understood what was going on, he would really engage in all the sports. Still, his mother was concerned that he had autism as well as his blindness. On the third day of camp, his sister, one of his counselors, told me of her mother's concern. I was able to reassure her I didn't think he had autism, but rather some typical blind mannerisms. He had been born 3 months premature and thus spent his first 90 or so days in the hospital. Studies have shown that this history predisposes children to such mannerisms. His sister relayed this information to his mother, and when his mother saw me the next day, she cried and hugged me. She had never had anyone with this extent of knowledge to turn to for an evaluation before now. One major barrier I found unusual and sad was the danger of being outside in Guatemala City. We were told we could not go outside the gate of the retreat where we were staying, a religious center with huge stone walls surrounding the rooms. I wanted to run in the mornings, so I had to run around and around the courtyard to get in my workout. On the fourth night, the danger became apparent when a murder occurred at 4 a.m. just outside the gates of our retreat. A research project we undertook with the parents at this camp revealed that the presence of continuous danger was indeed a barrier to recreation and physical activity for families. We felt our efforts were nevertheless worthwhile, as now the families knew what their children could do. Costa Rica. Not all overseas camps are easy to establish. You need locals who are enthusiastic and committed, and all, above all, capable of solving problems. You need local assistance from universities, foundations, and the organizations that support people who are blind, such as Lions Clubs. Anyone who can and will help. When we launched in 2011, Costa Rica had all of the above to varying degrees. Ana Lorena Morena was an adapted physical education APE professor interested in research on children with visual impairments. She worked hard to get her university, the University of Costa Rica Turrialba campus, to provide the dorms and food. The directors of the Puerto Rico Camp Abilities, Margarita Fernandez Vivo and Ibrahim Cordero, and their students came to help us launch in Costa Rica. I was fortunate to bring three students from SUNY Brockport who spoke only English. It was an effective partnership with the Puerto Rican students, as my students spoke only English and Anna's Costa Rican students spoke only Spanish, but the Puerto Rican students spoke both Spanish and English and were able to translate. Still, language created a difficult problem when Anna got the impression that I wanted to invite children with multiple disabilities. As a result, two campers with physical and behavioral issues arrived at camp. One was Diego, a 12-year-old who acted like a toddler and had no verbal communication. He was used to eating with his hands, so he pushed away a spoon and plate when we tried to feed him. The counselors went to work with patience and persistence. First, they employed a hand-under-hand technique to teach him how to use a spoon. The next day, he could manage the spoon after a counselor put food on it. On day three, he could handle the spoon independently, and by the end of the week, he could scoop food off this plate and eat with confidence. This might not sound like a huge achievement, but for Diego, it was spectacular. There's no telling what he might learn next if given the appropriate instructions and support. The other child, Jocelyn, was both visually impaired and deaf. She had no formal communication skills other than actions and gestures. If she wanted something, she pulled her hair or took off her sunglasses. Even the most experienced counselors would find this situation difficult. One day, Jocelyn and I were walking around the track together drinking coconut juice right out of the coconut. When I wanted to give her a break from holding it, I moved to take the coconut from her, but she pulled off my glasses because she wanted more. I instinctively moved her hands into position for the sign for more. The thumbs touched the fingertips on the same hand, and then both sets of fingertips and thumbs are brought together 2 times. Then I gave her more. I repeated this gesture several times until she finally signed herself. This time, I let her drink the rest of the coconut milk. Jocelyn could now spontaneously ask for more when she wanted something, bringing her 1 step closer to communication and self-determination. We had many successes with all the athletes that week, but our achievements with Diego and Jocelyn were particularly meaningful. However, our experiences with these 2 children were exceptional. A general rule at Camp Abilities is that children who have multiple disabilities and are not independent cannot attend. If they have no communication skills, they cannot attend, nor can they come if they have behavioral issues. 1 week is too short a time to properly work with children with intense disabilities, communication issues, and behavior issues. It is not fair to the other children when we have campers screaming, kicking, or biting. Most of my students at Perkins had multiple disabilities, unique behaviors, and limited formal communication, so I knew how to work with these children, but it's just too much to ask young counselors to work with these circumstances for 1 week. It has always been difficult for me to tell parents that their children cannot attend Camp Abilities, but it has gotten easier since we listed the requirements on the website. I can suggest to these parents other camps that would meet their children's needs. Adaptation comes in many forms. For example, when we gathered equipment for track and field, we realized the adult shot puts from the university were too heavy for our children. Margarita had been an APE professor for a long time, so she knew how to think on her feet. Her solution, a nearby coconut tree that was dropping perfectly sized and weighted shot puts onto the ground, a remedy unavailable in Brockport, New York. When I walked up to her line of athletes standing sideways with coconuts carefully placed at chins ready to put in the air, I had to laugh. Creative and motivated, Margarita found a perfect solution at our Costa Rican Camp Abilities. Costa Rica has no national association for athletes who are blind or visually impaired, not even teams for goalball, track and field, or swimming. Bringing Camp Abilities to the country showed what these children could do when given the chance. Success there provided 1 more reason to expand elsewhere. Finland. What do kids eat for breakfast in Finland? I asked. I surveyed the faces of my staff and students. Shoulders shrugged. Eggs and toast? Someone piped up and then grimaced. I don't know. All right then, let's find out. I clapped my hands, and 1 hour later, we were looking at menus of rye bread, cold cuts and cheese, and warm, buttery porridge. In 2011, I had met Erwin Bordemans of Finland at a conference in France. Originally from Belgium, he had completed his PhD there and then done a postdoc at Oregon State University, where I had earned my doctorate. He was now a teacher at a school for children with disabilities in Finland, where he lived with his Finnish wife and their family. Erwin and I became fast friends, exchanging our life stories and sharing the joys of our teaching jobs. Erwin loved the idea of Camp Abilities and quickly agreed to start one at his school. He would provide the setting for the camp and recruit local teachers and students as counselors. I would bring along a team of camp veterans to train the local teachers and volunteers to guide campers. I created a class through the Study Abroad office on the Brockport campus, and in 2013, 6 students enrolled in Camp Abilities Finland for 3 credits. The week before the camp opened, Erwin took our team, later dubbed Dream Team USA, on a tour of several schools for children with disabilities in Finland, starting in Helsinki. I was impressed at the level of organization and coordination among the schools. Every school used similar systems of technology, accessibility, and vocational training. They also had similar schedules, a significant advantage for those with autism. All of this made it easier for children to transition from 1 school to another. Another feature that resonated with me was the commitment to developing children's independence. Taken together, these positives made a powerful first impression that reassured me about expanding into Europe. The camp itself was set up at the Arla Institute for the Blind in Helsinki. All schools for the blind in Finland provide students experiences geared towards lifetime recreation, vocational training, and independent living, a mission entirely consistent with that of Camp Abilities. The sports program was a wonderful mix of the traditional and local. We offered the athletes traditional sports like swimming, judo, rock climbing, canoeing, paddleboarding, biking, goalball, and track and field. We also showed them beat baseball, which they loved. The Finns have long played a variation of baseball, but most had not seen or heard beat baseball. Another sport popular in Finland is disc golf. In this game, auditory cues are a good way to let athletes know where to throw the disc. Surprisingly, most of the campers that first year had never thrown a disc, so we taught them the techniques and strategy. In turn, we were introduced to mixed ball, a game created by a Finnish athlete who is visually impaired. This is not an international or even a national sport, but rather one that is local to the Helsinki area. It's a cross between goalball, floorball, a European game similar to hockey, and soccer. It uses a soccer ball with bells inside, along with string and tape floor markings to help players navigate. As in goalball, the players are blindfolded, but unlike goalball or soccer, the game is played one-on-one, or occasionally two-on-two. Another novelty for the Americans were the kick bikes. These look like scooters with bike tires, a small tire in the rear, a large tire up front, bike handlebars and brakes, but no pedals. Propulsion comes from riders pushing along the ground with their feet. They're fast and agile, but easy to stop quickly. My students love them, so I ordered two for our camp in Brockport and one for myself. We also experienced a Finnish sauna. After a day of canoeing and kayaking on the cold water, all the campers were excited to use the sauna in the recreational facility where the boats were. We poured water on the hot rocks and reveled in the scent of the steam and the wood. While going to a sauna naked is natural in Finland, my students and I were happy to keep our bathing suits on. My students were a little uncomfortable with the experience, which was new to them, but we all learned that there are many ways to enjoy a sauna. The last evening, we did a care to share. Although some campers were a bit shy about participating, the emotion in their voices revealed the impact of camp on each of them. The Finns joined the Yankee Girls for a popular line dance called the Cupid Shuffle, after which the staff joined Irwin to issue a camp newsletter in Braille. The Finland experience showed us that in many ways, things are the same the world over. Kids everywhere want to learn, especially kids who are blind or visually impaired. Achievement is universal drive, and sports can unite people in their pursuit of excellence. I left Finland convinced that Camp Abilities may have been born in the United States, but it would thrive around the world. Latvia. Latvia Camp Abilities started when I met Dr. Aya Klavina, a doctoral student at the University of Virginia. She was dynamic, energetic, and engaged in important research in our field related to peer tutoring, also an interest of mine. Aya returned to Latvia after her doctorate and got a job as a professor at the Latvia Academy of Sports. Her areas were inclusion and teaching children with autism. I continued to see her at conferences. Aya and I both knew a Latvian woman named Iviha Barda, whose son Georges was blind. I had met Iviha and her son, then 11, at the Finland Camp Abilities in 2013. Iviha and I enjoyed talking with each other through her broken English and gestures. We determined that she wanted to have her son engage in more inclusion camps in Latvia. We stayed in touch, and I followed the camps that she enrolled Georges in throughout the following year. Aya and Iviha shared an interest in starting a Camp Abilities, and I continued to inquire about the possibility whenever I talked to Aya. She recognized a need for this type of camp, but did not know how to set it up. I sent her the Camp Abilities manual, and after reading it, she felt confident enough to write a grant proposal to the government. The grant was approved. We spent a few months planning the sports and recruiting volunteers. and in July of 2017, we were ready to make Camp Abilities Latvia happen. 20 athletes, mostly with visual impairments, signed up. Katrina and I flew to Riga along with Dr. Allie Bryan, a professor at the University of South Carolina. Allie came to collect data on the campers' gross motor skills so that we could document the children's level of development. Iveha picked me up from the airport and brought Georges, now at 15, a foot taller than me. He had learned English very well because he had been attending school in Minnesota part-time at an inclusive high school and part-time at a school for the blind. He excelled at horseback riding and water skiing and competed all over the world in these two sports. As we drove to the school where the camp was to be held, I was surprised how far from Riga our route took us, deep into the countryside, thick trees on either side of a dirt road with no indication of a school anywhere. Finally, there appeared in the middle of the woods a small town called Upaslahas, where the school and a small hospital were located. In the Soviet era, children with disabilities were hidden away from society. This school was no exception. Camp Abilities Latvia featured tandem biking, stand-up paddleboarding in the nearby river, goalball, track and field, volleyball, swimming, showdown, and boccia. Boccia is a lawn sport with 4-inch balls that are rolled towards a white marker ball. The closest ball to the marker ball wins. The adaptation for children who are blind is to put a sound source near the white marker ball. Showdown is a game played on a table like a ping pong table with wooden curved sides about 4 inches high and pockets on either end. Two players, one on each end, are both blindfolded. They hold wooden paddles and wear hockey goalie's gloves to protect their hands because the hard plastic ball, about the size of a tennis ball, is filled with BBs. Each player tries to hit the ball into a pocket on the opponent's end of the table, similar to air hockey in the United States. A 2-foot barrier about a foot above the table between the players prevents the ball from flying up and hitting the opponent in the face. I oversaw biking, so I found a safe place on a walking path through the woods. Cars drove much too fast on the roads, even the back roads, for me to feel comfortable with the children riding there. I rode with 14-year-old Agnes, who is about 5'2", with straight brown hair and thick glasses. Agnes spoke little English, but was curious about the United States and me. As we looped around and around the woods, she asked me many questions about the United States and our life there. I asked her about her life at home and at the school for the blind. Although we often became stuck on words, for example, laughing about the similarity between the words puddle and paddle. I managed to learn a lot about her brothers and sisters, other family members, pets, and her hopes and dreams for the future. She said she wanted to go to school for the arts and perform in the theater, which surprised me because of her apparent shyness. Two physical education teachers from Agnes's School for the Blind in Riga were volunteering at camp, Vladimir and Kasper. Kasper, large and muscular but with a soft demeanor, was a Paralympian who practiced judo. He had a visual impairment. Vladimir later took me on a tour of the Riga School for the Blind, located in a neighborhood called Blindtown. This neighborhood is where people who are blind lived during Soviet times, and many with visual impairments still live here. The streets are accessible, and it is close to public transportation. Unfortunately, Latvia offers very few job opportunities for people with visual impairment, so the area is in disrepair and marred by peeling paint, weeds, and abandoned buildings. The School for the Blind, however, was being renovated. One classroom under renovation still had the Russian alphabet on the wall, although Russia had not governed Latvia since 1991. I learned that renovation funds were going primarily to the building structure, not to educational programming, and particularly not for physical education. For example, Vladimir told us that the children didn't like to play goalball because it hurt. The school had only the regulation hard balls and very few elbow and knee pads. There was simply no funding for more equipment. I observed that the treadmills and stationary bikes in the fitness room were over 30 years old, and a bike standing in the hallway was totally broken, unusable. Vladimir was nevertheless grateful for what he had, a fulfilling job that he enjoyed. He knew it didn't make sense to ask for more federal funds. They didn't exist. Another camper that year was Lilia, a cute 10-year-old, small for her age, with straight brown hair. She was extremely shy and did not talk to us at all, as she knew very little English. She remained that way until we took her to swimming class, which was taught by an energetic doctoral student of Aya's named Karina. Karina used excellent teaching methods and really thought hard about what she wanted the children at camp to learn. Lilia began with large water wings on her arms, but these were too buoyant for her body and forced her to float vertically. She was unable to kick horizontally or put her face in the water, so we asked her to take them off and use three noodles instead. Now she began to swim using her arms and putting her face in the water. Toward the end of the lesson, Karina put about 50 small, colorful plastic balls in the pool. Lilia and her small group of beginning swimmers were to retrieve the balls and put them in small hoops on the deck. Lilia could see these balls against the blue bottom of the pool. She laughed, giggled, and picked up every ball in her path. Then she dumped them out again and again and swam around with no fear, eventually using only one pool noodle. The experience truly brought her out of her shell. Afterward, she was friendly and talkative and even wanted to eat lunch with us. What a difference! Victoria, age 11, small and totally blind, came for half days and did not stay overnight. She spoke little and rarely interacted with her surroundings, often putting her head down. She sometimes dropped to the floor and refused to do activities. Her counselor, Christina, had instructions to just do what she could do with her. Victoria sat on the side and occasionally rolled the goal ball off her lap to her coach. For volleyball, she relied on total assistance to move her body through each skill required to throw the ball over the net. She did enjoy swimming, floating, and kicking in the shallow end with assistance. The most amazing transformation occurred during stand-up paddleboarding, SUP, or as the Latvians pronounce it, soup. While walking to soup, I asked Victoria if she was excited about going. Before she could respond, her counselor, Christina, informed me that Victoria would not go on the soup board. Christina felt that Victoria would not be able to stand up on the board in the water and paddle by herself. I mentioned that Victoria did not have to stand up on the paddle board just because that was its name. In fact, Victoria could sit on the board with Christina supporting her from behind and assisting with paddling. So, the two of them first sat on the board on land, and Christina showed Victoria just what she would be doing in the water. They did hand-over-hand paddling, and Victoria showed that she understood and was comfortable. Then we pushed them out into the water, and Victoria paddled with support from Christina. Even with Victoria's head down and her baseball hat on, I could see the huge smile on her face. They stayed out there paddling for an hour. It was an eye-opening experience for both, and Victoria later shared her accomplishment with everyone. When her father came to pick her up and I showed him the photos of her on the soup board, he shed tears of pure joy. As he took Victoria home that day, she stunned me by turning her head toward me and saying in clear English, "Goodbye, Lauren. I'll see you tomorrow." We had many success stories that year. Edwin, who was 16 and had never been away from home, cried the entire first day. We thought he was going to leave because he was homesick after just 1 hour at camp. But after learning to dive and swim in the deep end, biking for miles, and making several good friends, he stayed and had a wonderful time. I, too, made good friends in Latvia. We are still in touch. Bangladesh. I met Dr. Renuma Karim from Bangladesh when she was a professor in the recreation department at SUNY Brockport. She was an excellent professor and a dynamic person. She and her college friend, Shilpi, dreamed of starting a non-for-profit organization that would make a difference in people's lives. They eventually started the Heroes for All Foundation, whose mission is to equip youth in Bangladesh with leadership skills and help them develop positive character traits. She continued to divide her time between Brockport and Bangladesh, and in the summer of 2017, she contacted me to discuss the possibility of a Camp Abilities in Bangladesh. I knew little about Bangladesh, but assumed that a Camp Abilities would make a big difference for the children there. Renuma and I planned and planned, and then in September, she left for Bangladesh. She told me she could get 3 plane tickets donated from Qatar Airways to help start the camp. I knew that if Renuma wanted more support for the camp in the future, we needed to get preliminary data on the motor skills, physical activity, and perceived motor competence of the participants. So I invited my good friend, Dr. Ali Bryan, and her postdoctoral colleague, Dr. Megan Irwin. Renuma contacted the Assistance for Blind Children, ABC organization in Bangladesh, and they chose 30 campers. Renuma solicited donations of hotel rooms and food, purchased some equipment, and ordered banners and put together an effective team that included college students from surrounding universities. That January of 2018, I left the study abroad class I was teaching in Quito, Ecuador, and made the 2-day trip to Bangladesh. It was a grueling trip from Quito to Philadelphia, and then the next day, first to Doha, Qatar, and then to Dhaka, Bangladesh. It did help that the flights were first class, so I did get some sleep. I was so happy when I finally arrived there. When I arrived, the traffic there was like nothing I had seen. Thousands of people in the streets were riding bicycles and driving little 3-wheeled vehicles that ran on compressed natural gas. These competed with vans, huge buses, cars, dogs, and pedestrians crossing the streets with what seemed to my visitors' eyes to have no rhyme or reason. The next morning, we left for North South University, Renuma's and Shilpi's alma mater and one of the best universities in Bangladesh, similar to our Columbia or Yale. 30 students from various universities around Dhaka had volunteered to be counselors. They were mostly marketing, finance, and business majors, far different from the volunteers we were used to at home, who mostly majored in adapted physical education, teaching the visually impaired, or orientation and mobility. I realized this 2-day camp would require a larger learning curve. The culture in Bangladesh was divided sharply into the well-off and the very poor. A person born with a disability often faced a life of poverty and exclusion. For this reason, not one of the students in the training had ever met anyone who was blind. The only place they had seen a person who was blind was begging in the street. I had seen groups of men who were blind walking with their hands on each other's shoulders and begging from car to car. Later, in the taxi, on the way to the airport, I saw a boy of about 5 who had no eyes being led by another boy of about 8. They were walking from car to car, begging. The 5-year-old pressed his face against my window, and my heart broke. These images were all these college students knew of the abilities of people with visual impairments. During our training, I had the college students wear blindfolds and play cricket, run, walk, and practice guiding techniques. Ali and Megan taught them how to teach the motor skills and the specific cricket skills. This was difficult for students unfamiliar with either visual impairment or with teaching sports, but they all worked hard to learn. The first day of camp, we arrived early to find large, inspiring banners with the logos for Heroes for All and Camp Abilities. The venue was a small building with a porch, a large field, tennis courts, and a basketball court. A few large tents were pitched in the grass for shade. We set up the guide wires for running, as well as 2 cricket pitches on one side. The boys arrived first, eager to get started, and I noticed that they were not children. They ranged mostly between 13 and 18 years old, and some looked even older. Then the bus of girls arrived, all wearing headscarves, dresses, and pants, and a bit younger than the boys. To my surprise, they put on their yellow Camp Abilities Bangladesh shirts over the long sleeve shirts they were already wearing. It was at least 80 degrees, and they wore these layers of clothing all day. After pairing up counselors and campers, we asked the campers to fill out questionnaires related to physical activity, perceived motor competence, and sport experience. When they sent one group to motor skill testing, two groups to running, and one group to cricket. The running groups, at first, the boys, tried four running techniques: guide wire, tether, human guide at the elbow, and running independently to a clap sound. For many of these young men, it was the first time they had ever run alone, and they loved the feeling. I noticed that some of the campers did not know how to do the arm swing, which is a critical component of the run. In the United States, when we teach the arm swing, we use two hockey sticks or two brooms. Here, we had neither. So I got two cricket wickets, and we had the counselor run in front and the camper run behind, each holding one end of the wickets. With the counselor swinging his arms in the rhythm of the run, the camper could understand the timing and extent of the swing. At the end of the session, we set the campers up to run the 50-yard dash for time, and all of them chose to run independently toward a sound. They did several sprints, improving their time with each one. When it was time to change stations, I thought it would be smart for the boys to teach the girls the different running forms. The counselors responded with a firm no. In this Muslim country, it was not appropriate for boys to teach girls, especially since they would have to use tactile methods. So the girls came over and learned the running techniques while the boys took a break. The girls also liked the independent running. For most of them, it was the first time they had ever run. When it was time to play soccer, the Heroes for All staff had found an innovative substitute for bell balls, which were not available in Bangladesh. Even regular soccer balls were expensive. They had purchased ball-shaped floats for water tanks, such as flush toilets, and inserted jingling, noise-making materials inside. These balls withstood hours of soccer fun. At our Care to Share at the end of the day, the campers found they had much to say about the potential abilities of people who are blind. One boy, who had been quiet all day, spoke like a politician for 10 minutes. That night, Ali, Megan, and I went to Shilpi's house for a traditional Bangladeshi dinner. Her house was as splendid as a mansion, with marble floors, carved wooden wall decorations, and beautiful artwork throughout. A long table was set up elegantly with silverware, linen, china, and bottles of water. Alcohol is not consumed in Bangladesh. When we met the campers bright and early the next day, at least three news stations were there with video cameras. Then, at about 11 a.m., there was a big commotion. The most famous cricket player in Bangladesh, Mushfiqur Rahim, had come to meet the kids and play some cricket. Campers, counselors, and volunteers stopped everything and surrounded him, and the media went crazy. A cricket game was set up, and Mushfiqur first pitched and then moved to bat. He pretended to close his eyes, but I knew this would not simulate the true experience of many of our campers. I got a blindfold and gave it to him, and the crowd went wild. He attempted to hit the pitched ball, which in blind cricket is rolled on the ground. When he did hit the ball with his bat, the crowd again roared with glee. When he left, after posing for many, many photos, everyone attempted to return to their focus to the sports they had been playing. But soon after, the captain of the Bangladesh cricket team, Mashrafi bin Mortaza, arrived to meet the kids and play cricket too. People were thrilled at the attention and validation from these athletes. Renuma had called, emailed, and finally camped outside the national team's cricket practice in order to tell them about Camp Abilities Bangladesh. Her will and determination made these visits happen. We had an interesting experience with our own cricket game that day. The girls had set up their game and started playing before the boys arrived. It was not culturally accepted for boys to play with girls, so the boys had to set up a game elsewhere. As it turned out, they did not like the surface of the field they found. So the boys' counselor came to me and said that the boys wanted the girls' cricket pitch. The girls were simply expected to move. It was quite an eye-opener when I said, "No, the girls won't move for you." I told him, "They already started their game. Find a smooth spot somewhere else." I won't forget the look on the girls' faces when I stood up for them. The boys eventually set up their game elsewhere and had a great go of it. Closing ceremonies were held in the theater of North South University. As with most places in Dhaka, to enter, we had to pass through armed guards, a metal detector, and a security wand. The guards in every building even run a mirror under each car to ensure their safety. The campers sat in the velvet seats, eager for the ceremony to start. Shilpi was the MC, and dignitaries from Assistance for Blind Children, ABC, North South University, and even Qatar Airways, who had donated our tickets, spoke. It was gratifying to hear them describe a new appreciation of sports for children with visual impairments. The campers came up on stage and excitedly received their certificates and medals. At about 10:30 p.m. on the way back to the hotel after another wonderful dinner, Megan looked over her shoulder, pointed, and looked stunned. On the highway overpass, in the dark, was an elephant walking along with a man on top. I had never seen anything like it. I guess he had to get home too. The next day, Camp Abilities Bangladesh was in every major newspaper in Dhaka. The cricket players had helped them land a prime spot. As difficult as it was to put together, the camp was a huge success. As Camp Abilities travels around the world, finding new homes in other countries, I feel more and more aware of the importance of the work I do. It has required more effort, sacrifice, and joy than I dared to dream years ago. But that's how I know this dream is far bigger than me. It has become a dream that is shared, a dream for the next generation to carry on.